By the way, for any of my students, this is I'm going to call this a must-have. They should definitely get this one.
So this is a biography of Abdul Yusuf Ali. This is a biography of, well, his picture is there. That's Marmaduke Pictol.
That's what Marmaduke Pictol looks like.
Yeah, handsome fella, right? Who's going to try this Scots reading?
Now, maesters, thence to pass in pilgrimage. After a bunny week
trousel.
I think it's probably best if I close that now.
What did I just say?
But the point is...
What did I just say?
So... This one, whenever someone says to me, stay in your lane, I say, I am. Okay.
You've been waiting for that for so many years. So this session, we're going to talk about...
A lot of things, inshallah.
Looks like it.
Right, so let's start with Arabic language resources. Now, obviously, somewhere in my archives, I've got stuff that I learned Arabic from, including grammar.
Right.
Nahu, sarf, balagha, adab. I don't have all of these things out and handy, but I have some things which I feel like I can use sometimes as like handy kind of summaries of Nahu concepts and definitions.
I got that.
And things which I think can be useful for teaching Arabic. This is an unusual one.
Hmm.
Oftentimes when you're teaching Arabic, not so much in your style.
English
but,
grammar.
Yeah, exactly. It's not Arabic Arabic grammar for English students. It's English grammar for students of Arabic.
That's actually really beneficial.
Right. I actually had this idea, because I saw the French one actually. And I thought, I should write an Arabic one. That would be so good. And then I found that it was already done. So Alhamdulillah. Saved you time. So basically the idea is introducing you to how your own language works and some of the structures of it so you can start to compare how it's going to be in Arabic as you, right. as you progress to learn. It's a nice textbook. I don't know if you know Haywood and Ahmed use this one. And a really nice one in Arabic, which is called in English, A Dictionary of Arabic Grammar from the Holy Quran. What I love about this is each page has got one rule in it, and then it just gives you, you know, purely Quranic examples, and you know, it's got sort of nice diagrams, and it's a really good kind of revision
That's
tool, I think.
Really great, yeah. Can I see that?
Of course. While you're taking a look, I will mention that a lot of people study a book called the Ajrumiyya.
Of course.
I don't know if I should share the secret with you. I never studied the Ajrumiyya. Actually, most of the things that people studied, I didn't study. But somehow...
Well, I share your secret, my friend.
I know.
When I studied the Ajrumiyya? 8 years ago when I decided to teach the Ajrumiyya.
Ah.
And...
How did that go?
It was passive-aggressive. It went really well.
Okay.
But then I really appreciated our curriculum after having studied the Ajrumiyya.
I mean, this is a translation... Of the Ajrumiyya, I've thought about using it, you know, because the translation can help people to access it. Even if there are things that I might disagree with in the translation, you can also point those things out as you go.
Right.
This is quite dear to me because my Arabic teacher gave me, it was his copy and he gave me that.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Dr. Abdul Munim. So that's the commentary of Muhyiddin Abdul Hamid on the Ajrumiyya called At-Tuhfatu Saniya. This is his edition of the Sharh of Ibn Aqil. This we actually studied in Al-Azhar to some extent. It's a commentary on the Alfiya of Ibn Malik. So this is one of the, you know, detailed texts that is studied. And this is quite cool. I saw this recently in a bookshop here in the UK. Hashia of Al-Alusi on Sharh of Qatr al-Nada. Of Ibn Hisham. So what intrigued me about the possibility of studying this is, look, here's a mufassir that I use a lot. And obviously in the tafsir, you've got all the grammar discussions taking place. But this is him directly presenting the grammar. So through this, I can understand his concept and way of doing things. So, you know, if Allah gives us life and students, we can teach this stuff. And then in Balagha, I know that you happen to love this particular work of...
I do.
What's his name again? Sayyid Ahmed al-Hashimi, Jawahar al-Balagha.
Yeah.
Is your copy as pretty as mine?
I have four copies. None of them are this purple and yellow.
I'll take that. So this is a nice sort of reasonably introductory text. I studied before that something called probably Al-Balaghat al-Wadiha.
Yeah, I didn't like that one. I really like this one.
And this is a book by a friend of mine, which is done in English. So it's good sometimes to have English
I didn't books. Know there was another one. I remember Arabic Rhetoric, A Pragmatic Approach by Abdul Rauf. Oh. Very convoluted. I found it very difficult to test.
Yeah. I think hopefully this would be a bit better than that. But it's good to see how terms are translated and cross over into other languages. Mm. And I have a few things that are kind of literary. I'll bring them over. We'll start with this one.
This looks really good.
There you go. Noman Ali Khan just recommended your book.
I did.
There you go.
Balagha students, go through this.
So this is pretty cool. This is so that you can learn. It's a classical book. You can learn...
proper composition.
Yeah, and how, like, different ways of saying the same thing.
Right, that's wonderful.
I'll grab something from here.
This is really good.
The author died at 320 of the Hijrah, so it's early.
Wow. So you would speak like an ancient.
Yeah, don't just say boring things like what do they have, for example?
I mean, I saw a couple of
Bab
Fulanun Ghurratu Mudar.
You want to talk about someone being honorable and right. Lofty. So you're going to
say وسلامها وذؤابتها وهو في بيت شرفها وفي ذروتها وذروتها. Okay. فلان نبعة أرومته وأبلق كتيبته وبيضة بلده ومدرة عشيرته.
He's the egg of his town.
Okay.
He's the egg of his town.
He's the smooth. وزعيم قومه وفتى قومه وعميد بيتي. Okay, all right, easy there.
So yeah, I've heard some teachers recommending that book. I think this is one that Dr. Akram teaches as part of his Arabic course. I just bought this in bilingual edition, Kalila wa Dimna.
Uh huh.
So it's like it's compared to Aesop's Fables.
I see.
But it's an old text that sort of circulated amongst different cultures, you know, Persian and so on. But then, you know, Ibn al-Muqaffa rendered it into Arabic. And this has been translated by a couple of, you know, leading Arabic literature translators. So I thought the bilingual thing would be pretty good to study. And speaking of Arabic literature translators, this is Maqamat of al-Hariri. I haven't had the opportunity to study this, but I thought, you know, it'll be interesting. As a piece of literature, which is very much about wordplay, which I get a lot of pleasure from, we've got this translation called Impostures. So all of this, it's not part of Quranic library, let's say.
But it's literature. And
in order to, you know, appreciate the language of the Quran, it really is important to have a sense of language more broadly.
Yeah.
And get some delight from eloquent Arabic speech. So then you can see, the way the Quran works is a cut above all of these things.
Yeah.
But you can see the tools that are in operation in language.
It gives you a taste for what's happening with the Quran too, because it's building on an existing taste palette, right? So it's not just, it's a cut above, because somebody could hear that and say, well, then I'll just go to the thing that's cut above. Why do I have to go a cut below? It's actually, you know, if you have a taste for the English language and then you hear beautiful English, then it's because you know you have an appreciation for something is why you can see something else. Another way to think about it is, like, if you don't watch any basketball, right, then you don't know a lot about the sport. So if somebody's playing spectacularly, you can't really appreciate what's so spectacular about that because that's not your sport. Or the same with me in football. At least football is the rest of the world uses it. I can't tell if someone did something incredible at a certain play. But people that are in the sport and are kind of familiar with plays and setups, and you know, when they see somebody do something out of the ordinary, they're like, wow, that was incredible, right? So it's the same with language, that you have to have a minimal lens, and that's what language and literature, not just grammar, but language and literature does. And then above that, when you see what the Quran is doing, now you can see, okay, that's pretty insane. That's pretty incredible. That's what Allah does in this case or that case.
Yeah, and then you got a book like the Maqamat of Hariri or other Maqamat as well, which you know are so tightly packed with wordplay, and it becomes an end in itself. The meaning and the message isn't really there. It's not doing something lofty like scripture and revelation.
You just want to get the pun in. That's
it. So that's the fun of it. But then when you find just small, you know, flavors of that in the Quran, certain turns of phrase,
you can pick it up quickly.
And you've got the sense of it, yeah. You don't want too much of that. Obviously, it would take away from the purposes of the Quran. But this translation itself, here we are, right?
Scott Free.
Hakal al-Harith ibn Hammam. So this is the translator, Michael Cooperstein. He did something very crazy. And every single maqama, every chapter, he's translating a different style of English. And he did that because the maqamat themselves, you know, some people consider it to be like untranslatable and just, you know, the language is just out of this world almost. So he's saying, let me do something, you know, equally crazy. Who's going to try this Scots reading?
No, maesters. I had gained our two.
I was going to do it, but okay. You just.
Our truly thence to pass in pilgrimage. After a bunny week's work on. And coming to look like a right clarity stuck or dirt, had I taken the bath and I was glagering for a bit moose than a heavy trousel.
I think it's probably best if I close that now. But the point is,
what did I just say?
But as people who, you know, we engage in translation as well, I think it's useful to study translations as a genre. You know, not just Quran translations, but translations.
Yeah, because I won't forget trousel. That was a trousel.
Being willing to do something, you know, out there and really push the boundaries, I think is...
Did you understand that?
I was reading the Arabic at the same time.
So okay.
Yeah. All right, so next chunk of this is Quranic dictionaries.
Okay.
Or not entirely just Quranic dictionaries. This is Lane's lexicon of the Arabic
lexicon.
Language, and it draws from some of the main
Arabic lexicons.
Arabic dictionaries like Lisan al-Arab and you know the source text as well.
Taj al-Urus, yeah,
mentioned at the back here as well. So this one, whenever someone says to me, "Stay in your lane," I say, "I am." Okay.
You've been waiting for that for so many years.
Most of these things start off on Twitter, and then now I have the chance to do it live. So this one, I mean, we find very useful usually in terms of, you know, using it to search online. But that's because in terms of Quranic dictionaries that are specifically about Quranic language, one of the important ones is Al-Raghib al-Asfahani.
Of course.
Al-Mufradat fi Ghurib al-Quran.
Yeah.
And then there's a kind of follow-up to that by Asamin al-Halabi, whose work at Dur al-Masun, we talked about yesterday, the student.
Umdat al-Hafad, yeah.
He's got Umdat al-Hafad. And then in the modern times, this is one that is
that
very
you and I love so much.
Which is by Muhammad Hassan Jabal.
Yeah.
And this has a very special approach to looking at how the meanings within one three-letter root, or even within sort of two-letter pair, how they kind of revolve around a core sense, as al-ma'an al-mihwari.
Yeah.
So, in quite a remarkable way, he manages, for the most part, in quite convincing ways, to show how the different words that are under one root can be traced back to something that connects them. That can be quite difficult, can be quite challenging, because at the end of the day, language is not mathematics.
Right.
It doesn't have to follow that way. But it seems that in the Arabic language, it really does follow that way to a very considerable extent.
He's able to capture a lot of that.
And he's able to capture a lot of that. Yeah. So this book, Al-Mu'jam al-Ishtiqaqi al-Mu'assal, is a very important work. And we're doing our best to extract that, and that reflects...
A lot of his notes make it their way into our durus. So when I do Deeper Look series, a lot of the word analysis comes from his work, because it's so well juiced from the other sources, like Lisan al-Arab, like Lane, like you know, other dictionaries. And it's, yeah. This has become kind of a go-to because he's already done so much of the work and he synthesized it. And that's important.
So Lane also then helps us to understand that the references that he's drawing from, you know, when he's taking from the Lisan al-Arab and so on. Then this is one which has been around for a while, and then this is a sort of revised edition of it by Penrice.
Incidentally, about Lane, when I get stuck in Lisan al-Arab on some phrase that I just don't know what he's getting at, I go to Lane, and then that helps out because he's done quite a bit of digging into what those figures.
Yeah, this scholar, I mean, he it's just incredible, really, the amount of work that he must have put in, and also the precision with which he actually gets across. I mean, this is just a hugely invaluable resource.
Yeah.
And then my own teacher, Professor Abdul Halim, is one of the translators or the authors and editors of this Arabic English Dictionary of Quranic Usage. So again, this takes us into specifically Quranic words, and then it's, you know, with the English discussion. So you could see it as almost a supplement to this Halim's translation. It's not exactly that, but because they have to adjust things a little bit for various purposes.
Right.
But that is, you know, that helps you to understand the source of their linguistic opinions. So that takes us ever so neatly and smoothly onto the subject of Quran translations. Now, obviously, there's only so much that we can say in
definitely
quick journey, and we will talk about Quran translations more as we work through our translation.
Yeah,
but naturally, we acknowledge and respect the fact that many people have gone before Muslims, even non-Muslims. This is the oldest translation that I have a copy of, which is by George Sale. So this copy was falling apart. I've tried to just sort of hold it together with some tape. But some of these early translations were, quite openly hostile towards Islam and the Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
We learned that a lot of Russian translations, the most popular Russian translation was actually done by an Orientalist who thought of Muslims as barbarians and was actually proliferated among Russian Muslims for a long time. And some of the later translations that were done by Muslims were heavily influenced by his translation. So, finding translations that are hostile to Islam is not uncommon.
Yeah, so, in the early 20th century, you start to see quite a lot of translations which even remain popular today. So an example of that is a translation of Muhammad Marmaduke Pixel. The copy I've got, I've got a few different copies, but this one also has the Urdu in it. So what's interesting is a lot of that happened in the subcontinent. So Pixel was in Hyderabad, and Abdullah Yusuf Ali was also in Lahore for a good part, and these things were printed in Lahore. So there's a very strong association of Quran translation with the Indian subcontinent. Even Muhammad Asad later on, he's got the message of the Quran. He was also based there for a certain time and was connected to even to the founding of Pakistan. And I think it's underrated sometimes just how much the subcontinent plays a role here. Yusuf Ali was between here, between England and Pakistan. And we've got here Abdul Majid Daryabadi. What's interesting about his, why I thought to highlight it, is...
not very well known.
It's not very well known, and, the edition, I don't think any edition of his work has come out recently that is full. The copy I've got here is in 4 volumes, and it's got quite considerable footnotes and commentary, and he actually calls it...
Tafsir al-Quran.
Tafsir al-Quran. So when we ask the question, why aren't there tafsirs written in English? Well, when you think about it, there are, but they are typically just on the level of translation and some notes. But when you have translation with enough notes, doesn't it sort of cross over into the genre of tafsir?
Right.
What really would be the difference? If you were to write a tafsir in English, the first thing you need to do is provide some basic account of the text, which is done by translation. And then what isn't covered by translation, you cover by further comments. So what really is the difference between that and tafsir? Rhetorical question. So here's just a few more that we picked out, from numerous that I happen to have copies of.
This doesn't seem like a bad translation at all.
Daryabadi is well regarded, but just hasn't been popularized. And again, you know, it depends on what happened to be digitized and then what happened to go on the websites and then what happened to go onto the apps. That's what determines if someone is worth reading or not. But it shouldn't be that way, you know. And some of the translations like Muhammad Asad, you don't get the full benefit of Asad or even Yusuf Ali without the footnotes.
Right.
But then again, there's some things in the footnotes, especially in the early editions of Yusuf Ali, which, you know, people might object to. Muhammad Asad, there's things that people object to as well. It all depends on your aptitude in reading and your ability to sift between things.
It's also challenging because then there's a huge population who only has exposure to the study of the Quran from a second language, right?
Mm.
So when they're reading commentary and interpretation, there's a degree of separation from the source material and the ability to research word analysis, phrasings, meanings, things like that.
Yeah.
So while this is a contribution, sometimes when someone says, okay, I have a Quran, and they actually have a translation of the Quran there.
Yes.
You have a work on the Quran and there may be more to it than what you assume. And so a lot of times out of necessity, maybe even out of a sense of, you know, the desire to live in the black and the white and not confront the fact that maybe there's things that I don't know or there's more to learn. I really want to hold on to this one.
So. You're getting comfort from the Dictionary of Arabic.
Yeah. I'm really liking this one. By the way, for any of my students, this is, I'm going to call this a must have. They should definitely get this one. Mu'jam Qawa'id al-Arabiyya min al-Qur'an al-Kareem. I think Applied Grammar. Abu Faris al-Dahdah, I think.
Really, yeah.
Good stuff. Inshallah.
So when it comes to translations, we're not going to get into commenting on what is the best or the great or good and bad and whatever.
We're not in the business of criticizing other work. We do so with an off-camera. That's not satisfactory or that we wouldn't have translated it like that and things like that. But we see no benefit in going through a work and saying, here's what we think is wrong with this one, what we think is wrong with that one. It's not constructive.
If somebody's got a copy, they want to say, what's the best? I'll say, well, what have you got? Well, that's what they've got. And then if they've got something which is reasonable, I'll say, that's fine.
Yeah.
You don't have to swap it for something else, you know, because what is best for each person can be a little bit subjective.
Can I see the Daryabadi again? Is it the entire Quran?
Yeah, entire Quran, yeah.
Just curious.
There is also one volume edition, which is just the translation and just very, very minimal notes. So Islamic.
Oh, this is multi-volume, is it?
This is a four-volume one, yeah.
Okay.
So then you've got, new translations coming out every year. The latest one, most likely, is this one by Noah Keller, The Quran Beheld. And he did that in conjunction with someone I consider a teacher of mine, Sheikh Ali Hani in Jordan. And the collaborative aspect of that is exciting, for people who are also doing collaborative translation.
Correct.
The tafsir-based approach to it is also of interest to see, the results that came out of that. And, maybe someone can do one day a comparison between the results that come out of our collaboration and their collaboration. I'm sure it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
And, it clearly is going to be very different, that much I can see.
That we can definitely see.
Psst. Did you know that Ustad Noaman and I have translated Surah Yusuf together? You can find the PDF online and you can also see a special video that we made together in Jakarta in which I'm reciting the Arabic and Ustad is reciting our English translation.
إِذْ قَالَ يُوسُفُ لِأَبِيهِ يَا أَبَتِ إِنِّي رَأَيْتُ أَحَدَ عَشَرَ كَوْكَبًا وَالشَّمْسَ وَالْقَمَرَ رَأَيْتُهُمْ لِي سَاجِدِينَ
When Joseph said to his father, Dad, I have actually seen 11 stars and the sun and the moon. I watched them bow down before me.
You can bookmark this for later. For now, let's get back to the books. So yeah, Professor Abdul Halim's translation, of course, you know, being my teacher and my PhD supervisor, I always recommend it to people. But it's just always the case that each translation has got its own style and approach. His translation tends to not feel the need to stick very closely to the wording because it's more about being fluent in English.
I feel like he's trying to capture the overall sense instead of the phrasing, yeah.
And for many people, that's what they need. And especially for someone's first translation, you don't want them to be bogged down with some of the specifics of Arabic phrases and so on. So that's in terms of Quran translations as they are. You know, you can benefit from...
Chime in a little bit. So, وَلَكِنَّ الْبِرَّ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ Yeah. He says, but virtue of is of him who believes in Allah. So you know how there's a...
وَلَكِنَّ الْبِرَّ مَنْ آمَنَ
He did a good translation of that ta'wil, of the taqdeer of that phrase.
Yeah, that's one of the ways of reading the way that the...
There's a nahwi way, there's the balaghi way, right? Sometimes there's a little bit of a divide.
In terms of what I've got on my shelves, like, because I was part of a project at Freiburg University in Germany called the Global Quran Project.
Okay.
I have an interest in Quran translations and different things pertaining to it. But one of the things that we do is also look at the life of the translator. And, you know, so this is a biography of Abdul Yusuf Ali. This is a biography of, well, his picture is there. That's Marmaduke Pickthall.
That's what Marmaduke Pickthall looks like.
Yeah, handsome fella, right?
Yeah. You would never think if you're sitting on a train with him.
Yeah. MashaAllah, scholar of the Quran. And I did a presentation about the experience he had going to Egypt when he finished his translation to try and get the support of the scholars of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very eventful trip where he received help from some scholars, but others were like, okay, you should stop this. You should not do this. You should not translate the Quran. It's a bad idea. Because at that time, it was a controversial thing as to whether the Quran should be translated.
Around what year is this?
That was in 1929 that he went to Egypt. So the debate was still raging amongst the scholars of Al-Azhar. And he, you know, there was some condemnations given against him by the senior scholars of Al-Azhar. But others were like, they took him under his wing, Sheikh Mustafa Maraghi in particular. But eventually that debate was won by the side who got flooded over by the
proliferation of translation and the need for it.
Part of the concern was, you know, that people are going to distort the Quran or people will replace the original with the translation, things like that. Mostly people have dropped the idea that you cannot translate the Quran, but there are still some, like this book, to me is respectfully a bit like flat earthism. Like you can believe in a flat earth, but then other people are building satellites, you know? This is a book which considers it to be a bid'ah to translate the Quran at all.
And
I've tried to read it. I haven't really given it its due, I would say. You get sometimes books which analyze translations, and when they're written by Arabs, Arab scholars even, like this one from Al-Azhar, it does sometimes pick at things which, you know, we don't necessarily agree with that criticism. One of the funny things is, so this author, he complains that Pickthall, for example, when he translates, وَلَا تَجْعَلْ يَدَكَ مَغْلُولَةً إِلَى عُنُقِكَ وَلَا تَبْسُطَهَا كُلَّ الْبَسْطِ He translates it, and let not thy hand be chained to thy neck, nor open it with a complete opening, lest thou sit down rebuked, denuded, right? So, the complaint that the author makes here is... Yeah, and what you've done then is you have made the English reader think that this is about hand postures. Whereas Pickthall actually received this criticism in the newspaper in Egypt back in 1930. This exact same criticism was made. And he responded to it back then. And he said, well, in English, it's understood that you've got expressions like tight-fisted, open-handed.
Yeah.
So English too has some level of metaphor.
Yeah.
You can work with that. If there are some expressions that cannot be understood, then you have to use an idiomatic translation. But here he said that the idiom is similar between
English and Arabic.
And then this is from our friends at Markaz Tafsir. تَعَدُّ تَرْجَمَةْ مَعَلِ الْقُرْآنِ See, تَرْجَمَةْ مَعَلِ الْقُرْآنِ translation of the meanings of the Qur'an is often, unnecessary. You just say translation of the Qur'an, it means the same. باللغة الإنجليزية في ضوء الإعراب. So it's talking about different Arabs and how they affect translations. So I haven't actually read this one yet, but it's the kind of thing that...
So is, are they looking at wujuh wa nadhair or...?
No wujuh wa nadhair, but wujuh of Arab, like different Arabs of right. a particular ayah.
Okay.
How
and how that would impact the translation.
Yeah, so I think it might take a few translations as a kind of case study. I can see this as mentioned some names here, like Pickthall, along with others. Yeah, Pickthall, Palmer, Rodwell, Arbery, Shaker, Sale, and Sahih International. So that is kind of the translation section. And one more for now is translations of tafsir. So when we were looking at tafsir, we saw mostly Arabic works. And in amongst that, there were a few translations as well. Like Amin Ahsan Islahi's tafsir, for example.
Right. I've
got it in English. Although it's not completed. The translation is not complete. But translation of tafsir is something which we don't have a great deal of, actually, in English. But there's some growth in the field. So I've picked out a few things to point out. First of all, let me say there is this book which I came across recently called Murshid al-Qari by Khalid Blankenship, and this is supposed to include all works in the field of the Quran and the study of the Quran that are in English, including translations of the Quran and translations of tafsir, all the way up until, you know, 2021 or so.
Wow.
But it doesn't. Because
it probably includes his library.
It doesn't mention this. It doesn't mention this. Most importantly, my translation. It doesn't mention this. So, yeah, and it's certainly not complete, but you know, might still be a useful book. Let's see. but personal grudges aside, we've got some translations from Tafsir of al-Tabari. This one is just some sections and selections. Comes in two volumes. And then we have got, let's say, Tafsir al-Jalalain. And just recently I met Faraz Hamza, who is the translator of this volume. And I asked him, actually, like, what did you think about being asked to translate Tafsir al-Jalalain? So, you know, understandably, he confirmed for me the same thing that I would say, which is that a tafsir like Jalalain is very terse and, you know, very... focused on this Arab or the meaning of a word, something like that. So it doesn't lend itself to translation, really. But, you know, he explained how he did his best job despite this inherent challenge of the work, and that some people benefit from it in different parts of the world. So, you know, that's available. And there's actually two translations of Jalalain. The other one is done by Aisha Buley. Aisha Buley, who's also the translator of... Al-Qurtubi, that's an ongoing project. There's a few volumes of that. Not all these things lend themselves to translation. That's kind of what I'm pointing at. And I know that Buley has abridged it to some extent, removed some things that she didn't feel can be translated. But also she has translated Tafsir of Ibn Juzay. She has done the draft translation, and the reviser of that translation is yours truly. So inshallah, it's going to come out before too long, in a year or so. In which case, you know, inshallah, it will be an accurate and smooth translation. I was going to mention also, before we get to Razi, the tafsir of al-Baydawi. So we mentioned the importance of Baydawi in the curriculum of Islamic seminaries.
Right.
But likewise, it's also captured the attention of Orientalist scholars and translators of the Quran. So the likes of Sale, for example, George Sale here, he tells us that he was using Jalalain and Baydawi. He said he's used a manuscript of Baydawi. So here in Glasgow, where we're recording this, there was a book published of a translation of Surah Yusuf from Tafsir al-Baydawi. It is awful, truly awful. I actually went through this whole thing and I've annotated the translation errors. I don't know why I felt, you know, somehow obliged to do that. And then I found that there's another translation of Surat Yusuf from Tafsir Baydawi by another Orientalist called Beeston. And this is actually a very good translation. with some issues, but mostly very, very good. D.S. Margoliouth has a translation of Surat Ali Imran from Tafsir al-Baydawi, which I haven't really assessed, but I should think will be good. And now we have a Muslim translator of Tafsir al-Baydawi, G.F. Haddad. He so far released this one volume, but I understand that he is close to completing and publishing the full Tafsir. So that should also be a good addition to the library of Tafsir translations. And then, last and not least, the great exegesis. So my work on Al-Razi's Tafsir, obviously, has been very laborious, very good for me personally. People seem to have responded well to it. Mm. But it's something which, you know, the idea of translating the entire Tafsir Al-Razi, you know, as we saw on my shelf, is 16 volumes in the copy I've got. I've translated one half of one of those volumes. And then I've translated another volume which isn't published yet. Yeah, so this is just this commentary on Surat Al-Fatiha. So I think the translation is useful. But at the same time, the idea of translating the entire work is just too much. And there's better ways to expend that tafsiri energy, and that is to write original works in English and to work also on some more modern things.
I agree.
Any questions?
All of this, and inshallah, now we're embarking on our own translation project. So we have to really revisit the goals that we have before us for our own project. And obviously take advantage of the work that's been done before us, but also acknowledge the gaps that need to be filled. So
the thing is, especially with Quran translations, so many keep coming out, in the English language particularly,
yeah,
that people need to ask the question, what is it that I'm adding with this? What is it that's missing that I need to do this?
Right.
And fair enough, if people have an answer to that question, they should go ahead. With us, we need to ask that question as well. But I think having started it, we got a sense of what it is that we maybe knew was missing, but it becomes clearer to us what was missing.
Becomes clearer, yeah.
Once we've started doing it.
That's
so,
right.
So, you know, without saying much more about that, we'll let people be the judges.
Inshallah. Inshallah. Allah give us tawfiq to do a good job. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. All right, barakallahu li wa lakum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
How would you like to explore the heart of the Quran, Surah Yasin, guided by an important mufassir of the 20th century, Muhammad al-Tahir ibn Ashur? We've put on a special course at the Ibn Ashur Center, going through Surah Yasin with a new translation and a new commentary based on the important insights of this great exegete. Head on over to ibnashur.com/academy to find out more. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.